Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's October 6, 2011, and this is episode 301.
Hey Martin, this is Chris Marquardt of Tips from the Top Floor. I just wanted to congratulate you on your 300th episode. I can't believe it's already 300. Time flies, and I know I'm a bit late for this, but I've been traveling to Toronto in Canada, and the travel just kept me from sending you this earlier. I've also finally got the time to look more into the workshop activities that you and I briefly talked about before my trip. I've always wanted to see Japan and Tokyo, and maybe we're going to make this into some sort of Martin Bailey and Chris Marquardt photo experience sometime next year or in 2 years. Let's just talk a bit more about this behind the scenes. Anyway, keep it up, and I'm so looking forward to the next 300 episodes. Cheers.
Thanks so much for that, Chris. And I can't wait until we have the details worked out and we can release some information on that workshop that we'll do together. I also received another message, and actually this came from Tom Rothenberg last week, and for some reason ended up in my spam folder. So sorry about that, Tom. Here's your message, which I really appreciate. Thanks so much.
Hi, Martin. Tom Rothenberg here. I'm a photographer in Virginia, here in the States. Just congratulating you on your 300th episode. It's a great achievement, and we're looking for much more from you. I'm wishing you nothing but continued good health and many more years of inspiring us all and sharing some really good information. So thanks for everything you do, and here's to another 300.
Really, thanks so much for that, Tom, and thanks for the best wishes on my health as well. Just a quick update for everybody that I really am still doing great. A few little bits left that we need to sort out, but I'm like 90% great now, so no worries. So in September, I had a conversation by mail with a friend that some of you may know from the MBP community, Jared Fain. And Jared had taken a look at the images on 500px following episode 295, an introduction to 500px, and asked how people achieved the punchy look that you often see there. I replied, and the communication resulted in Jared making some progress in his photography. So today I'm going to discuss what I told Jared and include some other tools and techniques that you might consider. Over the years, I've slowly changed how I make my images pop, and although I've discussed most of this in previous podcasts, I'm going to briefly touch on this again, but let's start with a little bit of history. Firstly, around 8 years ago, I noticed that some of my images were pretty flat and lacked contrast. And I remember someone telling me the last thing that I wanted to hear at the time, and that was that my old 100 to 300 millimeter lens, one of the three lenses that I'd been using for well over 10 years, was a piece of crap. Until that point, I'd figured that a lens is a lens is a lens, and I'd just started using my new DSLR at the time, which was the Canon EOS D30, with the promise that I already had my three lenses, so all I needed to do was replace the body. Well, if you know how many lenses I own now, you'll probably be sniggering as you've witnessed me slipping down this very slippery slope. But basically, I pretty much immediately realized that two of my three lenses were indeed pieces of crap. The only lens that I could have kept was my 24mm f2.8 prime, but the 1.6 times crop factor on the D30 caused me to set foot on that slippery slope, and by the old 17-35 f2.8 lens. So at that point, I sold the 24mm. It was already covered in that range. My mid-range zoom and the long zoom were soon replaced too, and I noticed that my images now had much more depth and contrast. Luckily, now, some 8 years on, even the crappiest kit lens is better than my two earlier zoom lenses, so this is no longer such an issue. But I mention this because if you are shooting with really old lenses and unhappy with the image quality, it does matter. The D30 was a revolutionary camera, but the way it processed images did leave a lot to be desired. The JPEGs were okay-ish, but the RAW files were totally flat, and we didn't have Lightroom and camera profiles back then to fix it. The only two options at the time were Canon's Digital Photo Professional, which remains the son of Satan to this day and never even gets installed on my computers anymore, or Photoshop. I remember that I would run entire batches of images through Photoshop, just automatically applying auto curves, and watch the image just pop out as the curves were applied. With the 10D though, I think it was, Canon introduced picture styles, which I thought was a huge step in the right direction. In my film days, I used to shoot Fujichrome Velvia, which was really heavily saturated, as I've always been partial to very rich colours, and Velvia gave me exactly that. Now, with the landscape picture style, I could get that Velvia look from my DSLR. The problem at the time, though, was that picture styles are proprietary. They still are, but that meant that only Digital Photo Professional could develop raw images and maintain the picture style. Then Adobe developed Lightroom, which I fell in love with from the initial beta stages. Although I was hesitant to shift my workflow to Lightroom because of the lack of picture styles. After a bit of experimentation though, I found that if I added between 25 and 50 on the red saturation slider and around 18 on the blue and green saturation sliders, the results were very much like the landscape picture style and my old Velvia positive film. So I was, at that point, able to fully switch to Lightroom. I would apply this saturation to pretty much everything that I shot during import, and it worked for most of my work. Adobe then developed camera profiles that were very similar to Canon's picture styles, which I also tried from time to time, but couldn't really beat my simple saturation boost. This brought us to around 2 years ago in the history of how we got here. And at the end of 2009, by that point, I'd been happy with my images for a few years and producing nice, crisp and punchy images. But then I bought an X-Rite Color Checker Passport and it transformed my photography again. I reviewed the Color Checker Passport and posted a video for episode 227 at the beginning of 2010. Which you can still go back to and check if you want to. But basically, you include your color checker passport target in an image when you start shooting, and then later on your computer, you then use that image to create a camera profile that you can apply to your images just the same as you would any other camera raw profile under the calibration section in Lightroom or Photoshop Camera Raw. When you do this, though, the colours in an image just pop right out at you. Taking my word for this, my word on this, and picking up a colour checker passport was Jared's major breakthrough following our recent conversation. Let's take a look at a couple of the images that I sent Jared to convince him that the colour checker would make his images pop. Firstly, here is a white-tailed eagle shot that I photographed in Hokkaido just after releasing episode 227. And it's not a bad shot, but you know, nothing to write home about either. Take a look at this on your iPhone or on the blog or wherever you're viewing. And just sort of, if you're on your iPhone, just get that in mind. And right after this, I'm going to switch to a new image. This is the same image but processed with a camera profile that I made from a photo at this location, including the colour checker passport. This profile has been my standard sort of clear winter's day profile for my 1DS Mark III. If you can't see the difference here, you know, really go to the gallery and at the bottom of, the gallery at the bottom of my blog and click on the thumbnails of the first image and then the, you know, click on the right side of that image to switch to the second one. You'll be able to see the difference plain as day if you do it that way. The difference is obvious, and if it isn't, then you have a bigger problem in that your computer display seriously needs calibrating. One thing to note, though, is that I don't apply color checker passport profiles to all of my images. I usually do this when I feel that the color could be enhanced or when I'm shooting something that I need to be color accurate. Even so, though, I'm very happy with the depth and punchiness of my color work, and it wasn't that obvious to me why this is until I really thought about this to answer Jared's question. Here are a few other things that I always do. Firstly, I never use auto white balance. AWB is the daughter of Satan and should be banished from the planet along with DPP. Sure, auto white balance can get you close, and it's certainly a lot better than it was until a few years ago. But still, it's the result of the camera taking a look at the colours in the scene and or the colour of light that falls on a sensor on some cameras. And even that light is reflected onto the camera from the scene that you're photographing. So there's a bias there. The result is that if you're photographing a field full of red flowers, for example, the camera will think that the white balance needs to be more blue and basically cool it down. If you're shooting a field full of blue flowers, the opposite happens and your white balance is warmed up. I once shot for a few hours with auto white balance turned on by mistake, and having made a number of exposures from exactly the same location of exactly the same subject but with a very slight movement of the camera, and you know, the color was shifting all over the place, I thought maybe that this was so, you know, I checked the white balance setting and it was on auto. If you want to get close and, you know, will reset your white balance to something constant in post, then, you know, break a leg, you know. But personally, I would rather have everything constant from the get-go. So I choose to shoot with either a preset, usually daylight, or a custom white balance created from the grey card included in the colour checker passport. Usually, if I do a custom white balance, then I follow on and shoot the main colour target on the passport and create a camera profile to really snap those colours in. But just have control over your white balance. It can make a huge difference just in itself. I also pretty much always use manual exposure. This can be scary, but taking control of your exposure makes you consciously think about how you're exposing the scene. Unless I'm going for a low key, an overall dark image, I expose to the right. We've covered this before too, but generally what this means is that I keep increasing my exposure, changing the shutter speed, you know, basing this on the fact that I've probably chosen my aperture for the artistic effect with the depth of field. But I then go ahead and change the shutter speed or ISO to increase the exposure of the image until the brightest part of the image is just about touching the right side of the histogram on the back of my camera. Note too that if your camera has the ability to display an RGB histogram, turn it on. The standard grey histograms are displaying an average of red, green and blue channels, and this can give you a false sense of security. Depending on your subject, one of the channels can start to blow out or become overexposed before the other channels, and it's sometimes only possible to see this with an RGB histogram. So when I say that you expose to the right, that means that the rightmost color channel is just about touching the right side. The two other channels might still be a way off, but you don't want to blow out any of these channels unless you're doing it on purpose or, you know, for specular highlights and stuff like that. The reason that this will help with the overall punchiness of your images is because you'll probably end up capturing your images with a little bit brighter than your camera would if you left it to its own devices. Nice bright images will generally be punchier if you don't expose your images this way. Just try grabbing the exposure slider in Lightroom, Photoshop's Camera Raw, or Aperture, or whatever you're using, and move that exposure slider to the right until the histogram data is just about hitting that right side. You should be able to see that this makes your images look light and crisp. If the image appears to blow out, even though, you know, to look overexposed, even though you're not actually touching the right side of the histogram, then you have your monitor, your computer display set too bright. Another thing that I do is purposefully choosing overcast days to shoot on. Sure, the eagle shot that we looked at earlier was a beautiful clear day, and that works well, especially with a field of snow to bounce lots of light into the underside of the bird. But a lot of the time I head out on overcast days more than sunny days, especially for landscape work. When you shoot on overcast days, you don't have bright reflections to deal with, and the sky is like a huge softbox, spreading light evenly and filling in the harsh shadows that a sunny day would create. Take a look at this shot of a waterfall in the Oyrase Valley that I shot on an overcast day. There are a couple of things to note here. Firstly, if this had been a sunny day, the water would have reflected the light so much that had I tried to keep the water from overexposing, the surrounding greenery would have been much darker and the shadow areas would have been totally plugged up and black. Also, the moisture in the air, either from the waterfall or some light rain, will have been keeping the foliage wet. And wet foliage is much more saturated color-wise, pun intended. Note that even if you're going out to shoot a waterfall on a sunny day, try to find out what time of day it will be in the shade, perhaps shaded by the valley walls if they're high enough. Although you'll lose that softbox effect of the sky, it doesn't necessarily have to be overcast if you can find some good shade. Something else to keep in mind though, and this will certainly improve the quality of light in your photographs, is to try to get out and shoot during the golden hour at around dawn or dusk. Because the sun is low in the sky, the quality of light is beautiful and warm, and even if it's direct sunlight, any shadows that are made at this time of day have a special quality. The light is just so much more pleasing than the harsh light on a sunny day, you know, during the rest of the day, the mid part of the day. My advice to shoot on overcast days or in the shade will help you to get nice saturated colours, but of course this depends on the kind of photography that you're doing. If you're shooting on a beach, you know, you've got a beach scene, you may well want lots of sun and a big blue sky with some fluffy white clouds. Personally, as I look through my own work over the last 8 years, I can find only a handful of blue skies in my landscape shots at least. They just don't appeal to me. And that really is my personal opinion, of course, but that, you know, that's just how I have found that I've been photographing for the last 8 years or so. When I do include the sky, I generally want it to be thick with dramatic clouds, and then I'll usually end up creating a black and white image from the resulting shots. When there are patches of blue, I generally still use that to create a dramatic black and white image, like this shot that I'm displaying now from last weekend that I shot with my Lens Baby Composer during a walk in the Shinjuku Gyoen Park here in Tokyo. I knew as I shot this that it would be converted to a black and white image, but sometimes I'll try black and white on finding the colour doesn't work the way that I'd hoped it did. It might. For the last few years, though, I've done more and more black and white conversions, and now since Nik Software released Silver Reflex Pro 2, that, you know, we looked at a few weeks ago in episode 297, I really have fell in love with this process. This, of course, is not about punchy colours, but you have to admit that these contrasty black and white images have a lot of punch still, more so than a colour image in some cases. I was a big fan of SilverFX Pro even before the upgrade to version 2, and Nik Software have done it again with the last thing that I wanted to cover on this subject today. Even though I owned Nik's Color Effects Pro 3 that was included in the complete collection that I bought a few years ago, I never really used it, and I didn't keep it as an option in my mental image enhancement toolbox. A few days ago, though, I downloaded the brand new Color Effects Pro 4 and gave it a try, and I've been blown away. I love the dramatic skies that SilverFX Pro gives me, and now with ColorFX Pro 4 and the ability to use multiple filters simultaneously, something that you couldn't do in version 3, I can bring out detail to create those dramatic skies in color images as well. I've been back and reprocessed some of my Antarctica shots from March this year, and I really love what I can now do with ColorFX Pro 4. Here's an example of one of my newly processed images, with a shot that I called Iceberg Alley. The first image here is my original processing, in which I did sort of, you know, I had already brought out part of the sky and that beautiful blue ice just below the surface, and this was just done in Lightroom. Here, though, is the new version re-edited with ColorFX Pro 4. Again, to really appreciate the difference, flick between these images using the gallery at the bottom of the blog post. But I'm not a fan of over-processed HDR images, but the effect that I can get with ColorFX Pro 4 looked to me like a really well-done HDR. Lots of tonality and punchiness, so I figured that it was worth mentioning it here today too. I'm going to be using this much more in the future. Remember that if you decide to buy this or any of Nik Software's amazing plugins, do use our code MBP15 for a 15% discount on your order, or click through from the banner on the right side of the blog. By the way, once I've gotten a little bit more accustomed to, you know, what you can do with ColorFX Pro 4, I will be producing a video to walk you through that, and it'll probably be either next week or the week after, but, you know, within the next week or a couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that if you're interested. So these are all of the things that come to mind as I've sought, you know, crisp and punchy images over the last 8 years or so, since picking up my first DSLR. I hope that it's been of some use. Listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter, Flickr, and Facebook, as well as my blog and the photography forum. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye.